When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Talking Transfers from the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by 90 Min's transfers correspondent, Graham Bailey. And you only today, Graham. We're half the team down. How's it going?
Yeah, back to the old days, Scott. Yeah, good, thanks. It's busy as ever for the window. We're not letting up at any point, are we?
We are not indeed. Toby and Sean out of action for today, so you'll just have to do with the original two that started this out. Anyway, please subscribe on all your major podcast platforms to the show, Talking Transfers, and follow us on the socials at @_ScottSaunders and @GrahamBailey. Are you still using Threads, Graham?
I must admit, it's dropped off a little bit when I'm remembering to do the bigger stories I'm putting on there, but I must admit, I haven't. I try and do the odd one, but no, my Threads are a bit of a standstill. I apologise to anyone.
Graham B. Bailey on Threads if you are a keen user, but Graham's forgetting to post. Anyway, nightymin.com/talkingtransfers for all the latest from the transfer front from us. There's a couple of weeks left. Is it 2 weeks today? Looks like the transfer window might close.
Something probably a little bit less. Is it Thursday?
I think it's Friday the 1st of September.
Okay. If it's a
Friday the 1st of September is 2 weeks today. So I believe we're 2 weeks out from the transfer window closing. Nightymin.com for all of the latest news and football reaction. We cover the Premier League, all the big teams in Europe as well. Now a bit of Inter Miami as well. Lionel Messi tears up that league. And yeah, Talking Transfers, we drop twice a week, so we'll be back on Tuesday and Friday, and then as we get closer to the end of the transfer window, we'll see maybe some more regular shows. Today, we'll be talking about Liverpool, because they have lost out on both Moises Caicedo and Romeo Lavia, who's been announced by Chelsea as a Chelsea player today. We'll talk what next for Liverpool. They have made the decision on at least one signing, by the looks of it, who could be announced soon. We'll talk through that. We'll talk Chelsea. What next for them? They have 2 weeks to potentially strengthen their squad, and somehow they will still continue spending, potentially. Lewis Hall might leave Chelsea for Newcastle. We'll talk Manchester United. We'll talk potential departures and incomings, what the holdup is for Benjamin Pavard and Sofiane Amrabat. We'll talk Man City and their deal for Lucas Paqueta, which is in doubt at this point. We'll talk Bernardo Silva, we'll talk Joao Felix and Joao Cancelo. West Ham are in the frame for Mohamed Kudus, and we'll dig into their plans for Mohamed Kudus if they are to get him. Tyler Adams is doing a medical at Bournemouth as well. Let's jump to the start, Graham. Liverpool have made a decision after losing out on Romeo Lavia and Moises Caicedo, both to Chelsea, to sign a defensive midfield. I don't want to say cover, but it looks like they're going for, does it look like they're going for two? Because they are signing a Japanese international. Tell us about that deal and how that's come about. And what might they do next, that since there's 2 weeks left?
Yeah, Wataru Endo, the Stuttgart captain, is coming in. He's had his medical at Liverpool. £16 million, Scott, is the deal for him. You know, it's a fascinating situation that Liverpool have gone for. You know, a lot of fans will be highlighting the fact that Liverpool have gone from 115 million down to 60 million for Endo, which I think is a bit of an unfair comparison from feast or famine sort of thing. This is being picked up by George Schmatke, the Liverpool sporting director. He came in the summer on a short-term deal. He knows the Bundesliga really well, more so than Jurgen Klopp, who's been in England for the last few years. He's a good player, from what we've been told, Scott. 30-year-old, he can play a holding role at six. It's what they need. He's a good player. Is he a great player? It remains to be seen. But I think he fills a need for them at the moment. But in terms of what you're saying, I think they will be bringing another one in. That is the plan, to bring a second one in. Will it be another number six? Possibly not. As I said on Monday, still hearing Ryan Gravenberch a lot. He's pushing for a move. Seems that Thomas Tuchel will let him out. And he looks like a likely candidate at this moment in time. They do like Doucouré at Palace as well. You know, they're looking all over Europe. Will they suddenly spend 70 to 80 on Doucouré at Palace? From the outside, it looks like they wouldn't. But in this window, Scott, who knows? This is a team who bid 111 for Caicedo. So they have got the money there to do it. But I think Endo coming in gives them a little bit of breathing space. You know, the fans probably, I'm not saying won't be happy, but, you know, it's a major stretch, isn't it, going from breaking the British transfer record to being one of the smallest Premier League deals of the window in Endo. So
what's the plan? I mean, you know, we obviously talk about there that they might still go in for another. We obviously know that they've still got not 100 million exactly, but 95-ish million left to spend if you go by the subtractions on the fee for Endo versus Moises Caicedo. And Endo, is he coming in as a starter? Is he a squad player? Do we know the details here? Or is this going to be reliant on whatever they do in the next 2 weeks?
I think it'd be reliant on the player, what he does. When he comes in, if he performs well, does well, he might start. I don't think they're bringing him in with any role in mind, particularly as either a substitute or a starter. I think they'll see what they've got when he comes in. They're trusting Schmatka to bring him in. Schmatka thinks he's a starter. That's what I'm told. He thinks he can come in and start in this Liverpool team. And given their dearth of number six options, Scott, like, I'm not really surprised by that. Who else is there to play there? You know, we saw McAllister struggle there on Sunday against Chelsea. Again, you could argue that was against a decent Chelsea team. So against the lesser Premier League teams, could they get away with it? Maybe. But, you know, they haven't got anyone in defence who can step in there. I know people are saying that Trent Alexander-Arnold can do, but as you pointed out in the previous show, defending isn't one of his strong points anyway. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't want him holding a midfield. It's a strange one. I still think they would defend a shot as well. It's a strange one. Liverpool started this window so well, and they're almost tripping over the at the end of the window. They're really not letting themselves down, but they're just not quite embracing where they were, having got McAllister and Szoboszlai in. Yeah, I think Endo's a good signing. How important, it's a good point you make. How important is he going to be? You know, you would want him to be the backup, really, but he might very well start.
We'll see how it plays out. I mean, you mentioned Ryan Gravenberch there. We've talked about him many times on the podcast over the last few months. Bayern's position publicly has always been, we're not going to sell him, right? But Thomas Tuchel has other ideas.
He does. When we got Lima, Grotzka, Kimmich in there, and others around there. I think, you know, I don't think Tuchel is won over by Gravenberch. He'd like to keep him, but I think the player, if he pushes hard enough, will get out. I think that's where his people are seeing it. And if he comes to Liverpool, we know he's not an out and out six, but I don't think he's that dissimilar to a Lavia maybe. So I think he could play that role for Liverpool if he needed to. It's a fascinating one. I think he's a possibility. I really do. But as you said, publicly Bayern aren't willing to say he's available, but we think he is.
Let's talk Chelsea then, because Chelsea are Chelsea winning the transfer window. There's always a team that wins. I think, well, they've spent the most money, definitely.
I don't think they win the transfer window, no, at this moment in time, because you've still got Nicholas Jackson as your number nine. If you finish the window as that, then you most certainly haven't.
Let's talk about that for a second, because I was there and I think I came to the same conclusion, really, that I know there were Chelsea fans who were quite encouraged by the fact that he runs in behind, you know, makes chances. But I think when you're a Chelsea, you need a striker who takes chances, and he didn't take chances at the weekend.
Yeah, you know, this is a player who almost like joined Bournemouth in January, and he looked like it in that game. Yeah, he's a decent player. He is a decent player. He's a Premier League player. But to fire Chelsea into the top four, you need more than that. He's not that player. He's not good enough. You know, they need someone more capable. Simple as that. They need someone better. You know, we'll talk about Mohamed Kudus in a moment in West Ham. I'm surprised they're maybe not taking a chance on him as others as well. But Vlahovic, obviously Osimhen signed a new contract at Napoli in the coming days, so he's not available. But I'm surprised they didn't make more of a push for Osimhen. I really am. I think Vlahovic might
other,
come
up. Are there other strikers out there? I mean, like that top tier, you mean?
Well, they are looking at Eli Wahi, who's the Montpellier striker, but they were thinking about loaning him out. He's an outstanding young player. I think he's better than Jackson, but is he that much better? Probably not. In that, you know, Jonathan David, no one was ever really won over by him. Same as Goncalo Ramos. I know he's gone to PSG, but people weren't convinced by him.
So in the other one is Colin Wani, right? Is the other one? But
yeah, and he's got PSG as well. And he's arguably more of a left-sided player, you know, a bit like a Neymar or an Mbappe type player. Hence why he's got a PSG to replace them. But the out and out number nine, I think it's Vlahovic. Do they end up giving Lukaku another chance, Scott? I don't I don't think that's beyond the realms of fantasy. If he's still there, and there's a chance he is, if he's still there and hasn't gone to Saudi by the end of the window, does Pochettino throw him in? I don't think he is. As we stand, I don't think he is, but I don't think he can rule it out as an option because he's better than Nicholas Jackson. He is. Simply, he is better than Nicholas Jackson. So that's a real issue for Chelsea. They've done well in the midfield. You know, if Enzo, Lavia, Caicedo, great. Levi Colwill signed a new deal. Axel De Sassi's come in as an injury replacement for Fana. Very good. Rhys James and Malagusto is going to play in quite a few games.
Well, yeah, Rhys James is now a long-term injury by the looks of it. So,
and we know about Ben Chilwell looking good. Keeper, not a massive worry. Sanchez, he's as good as Kepa, as we
said. He's been given the number one shirt this week, Robert Sanchez.
Yeah, he's as good as, he's as good as Kepa. We always thought that. But it is this number nine that's going to... But they've got 2 weeks to sort it out, Scott. So it wouldn't surprise me if they... And I think they're still in for another midfielder as well. Another midfielder and striker... Would not surprise me to see them getting that done.
Have been suggestions from elsewhere this week of obviously Michael Olise has signed a new contract with Crystal Palace. So that is another element to Chelsea's essentially bad week, but bad few days. Rhys James been ruled out with a hamstring injury. Not for the first time either.
I believe Olise was one for the future. So they were even considered loaning him out. So they were surprised, Chelsea, by that. You know, they had an agreement with him in place, but hey, in the short term, he's probably better served being there. But yeah, the relationship Chelsea have got with his family, his brother's already at the club. They thought that was done. So I'm a bit of a surprise.
See, I think that my conclusion from watching Chelsea last week was obviously they have now probably one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. Definitely moving forward for the next 5 years.
Must be the most expensive midfield.
Surely.
Is it the most expensive midfield in football history? Because it must be is it the first time in Premier League history this weekend, Scott, that we'll see 200 million pound players in the same team?
Potentially.
We have seen that with Neymar and Mbappe, haven't we? But this will be the first ever
Premier League.
This will be the first ever Premier League team to field 200 million pound players.
I would. Yeah, there's only been five. I want to say Jack Grealish, the two that Chelsea have, Declan Rice, plus one other, I want to say.
So it probably is Premier League record.
I mean, that midfield is obviously looking good. But I think the thing that stuck out to me with Chelsea last week was you need to take your chances. And Nkunku's out injured for a number of months. You do lose an outlet in Rhys James, who I know the way that Chelsea are playing looks like Ben Chilwell will get further forward than Rhys James, who was just going to tuck in a little bit. But at least Rhys James has in the past notched up goals and assists from right wing back or whatever. Heavy load on Ben Chilwell now to, you know, deliver that. But I think he can, but obviously you need a striker.
I wonder, once De Sassi's settled in a bit more with Chilwell, I do wonder if we see Pochettino go back to a four. I think against the lesser teams, I think we will see him go to a four.
Surprising, actually. Well, he insisted last week that he did play a four in his post-match press conference.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, because Silva... Yeah, Thiago has to have just... You play an extra player almost just to get Thiago through, which is that the right thing to do? we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, and until they get another forward in, it's a moot point. Top six would be a wonderful achievement if they stick with Nicholas Jackson.
Try telling that to fans of other clubs who watch in Chelsea spending. Anyway, Lewis Hall on his way to Newcastle. What's the conditions of that as it stands?
Yeah, Eddie Howe. You know a deal at Newcastle close when Eddie Howe starts talking about an opposition player, something he always says he won't do, which he has today. $30 million Chelsea want, up to 35 possibly. As we alluded to before on a previous show, Newcastle, they're not willing to step over anything on FFP. So to get this deal done, it would be a loan, technically, with a mandatory slash obligation. So basically, it's a permanent deal just for the first year loan. $30 million. It's an interesting one. He really is investing in the fullbacks here. Anyhow, he's already signed Livermento. He's now going for Hall, who I like as a player, very good player. And Livermento and Hall, you know, that's their fullbacks sorted out to wing backs for the next 5 or 6 years, isn't it? But I still think Newcastle are a bit short in midfield for some unlock. But
Hall can play in midfield as well.
It's a real investment in the future, and that's what they've got to do, Newcastle. You know, but obviously, we're saying it's not a bargain because they're paying for it, 30 to 35 million. But in the Premier League, that's your Premier League tax fee. You're on top of that, it's obviously, Scott.
Yeah, I think anybody looking at the transfers this summer, or even over the last few years, you know, your old 5 million fee has now been inflated to 25-30 million. That's just kind of your going rate for for a young player like that, and the players who are sold off for, you know, 10, 15 million quid are players who are pushing 30 on massive wages because clubs can't get rid of them. Anyway, that's the way it's looking. Newcastle, Lewis Hall, expected to happen. Obligation, you say, Graham?
Yeah, that's the only way they can get through it. And yeah, Chelsea won't accept an option because otherwise they'd just send them to Palace, who agreed a loan deal previously.
Yeah. Let's shift on to Manchester United, who have had not a good week, really, with trying to offload some players. So just some notes. As it stands, I'll just list a bunch of players here, Graham. Dean Henderson, as it stands, likely to stay as number two, which I'm sure he dreamed about over the past few years.
Yeah, we did allude to this fact, Scott, with Matt Turner coming in. Like, Forest were early in the window. Forest were always, I think United had an inkling something was up here, because we saw Forest when they were linked again with Keylor Navas. They always suggested they didn't do this permanent deal straight away. So it always had this inkling, didn't it, this deal, that there was something not quite right at the Forest end. I don't think they were fully convinced. And as it stands, not coming back in for him. And United, our understanding, isn't it, Scott, that United have told him, if you're still here, you're going to be number two. And yeah, United could be landing on their feet having Henderson as number two. I don't think he's particularly happy, but where's the other club for him? There's no spots for him in the Premier League, Dean Henderson. And he didn't set the world alight at Forest. He really didn't. I don't think, you know, if he was that good, remember he was linked to Chelsea in the past, wasn't he? Yeah. I think if he was that good, we'd see Chelsea coming in for him. And they're not. So I think, yeah, Man United number two might be his best option at the moment. And unless someone comes in and pays the fee, he's on a good wage and he's going to have to serve as Onana's number two.
So the next couple of players that we're going to talk about is one outgoing and one incoming, because it seems like United are needing to get players out before they come in. We talked Harry Maguire this week. As it stands, well, that deal is currently... Where do we stand with that? I mean, West Ham have said this deal's off. Mm-hmm. Is this a case of... this could be a West Ham actually moving on? Do they have another target in mind? Is this a bit secretive at the moment? Are they looking at just Kudus and then revisiting centre-back? Because this rests on United and Harry Maguire working out a pattern of ways.
No, they have moved on, Scott. Tim Stydin, technical director, he's setting up a deal for Dimitrios Mavropanos, the former Arsenal defender, currently at Stuttgart. That's getting very close now. 2025, the two clubs haven't agreed it yet. And yet they've accepted that Maguire has moved on. Harry Maguire, who I think... it depends which side of the coin you look at it from. You know, should he walk away from money at United and get out there playing football? Or should Manchester United, you know, use some of that money to get in to pay him off? Just get him out. If you're that desperate to get rid of him. And this is impacting on another player we'll talk about, Benjamin Pavard. It's impacting on that, Scott, where United, for me, I think United, and this is part of the reason I'm not condemning their window, but I think they're treating Maguire poorly here. I think, you know, you're giving him that contract. That is what, in football, you pay him up. Pay him up, get him out, then bring Pavard in, move on. Why are you even contemplating keeping Maguire. You've got the money. West Ham are giving you 30 million. Use some of that to pay him off. I just don't understand the reasoning of keeping Harry Maguire. They've took the captain's armband off him. Yeah, if he was on 100 grand a week, Scott, they'd keep him. No problem. But we know he's not. He's on twice that. And Tekka spoke to him. We've reported that. And yeah, and as it stands, they're stuck with him, Scott, because West Ham have moved on.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Maguire get a lot of flack this week for making the decision of, oh, he cares more about money than playing football. I challenge any person in that position who
it's
is
a lot of money, Scott. We're not talking about a few hundred grand here. Now we're talking about £6-7 million here. And United, you know, they've been trying to move him all summer, and they've had this opportunity to sell him. We know he's not going to go to Saudi. He may end up going to Serie A with a Juve and Inter, maybe. Ironically, in for Pavard now. United had a chance here, and this has collapsed because of Manchester. I think it's collapsed because of United, Manchester United, not particularly because of Maguire. Man United knew they had to pay him off. They knew it.
Well, I think the criticism of United's window is fair. I've spoken on this podcast about, I know you've said that you wouldn't particularly complimentary of the business they did over the past few weeks. I thought it was an okay start. Mm-hmm. The longer time ticks on, though, they've made this position where they have to now, they've been pretty clear, they have to sell in order to buy. You've mentioned Benjamin Pavard there. Inter have been after him for a number mm-hmm. of months. I think he went on record in January saying, no, I'd like to play in Serie A, you know, and this has always been there. United have, I think, Bayern have bumped the price up a little bit on Pavard, right? Which has affected United, but it was always conditional.
More for United than Maguire. Yeah, they were trying because really, Bayern last week, reading what they lost to Kyle Walker. I think it was a bit of a huff and said, oh, we want 40 million for him now. Inter, nowhere near that, you know, 25 million. I don't think they're 20 to 25. I don't think they get him out for that. Pavard is really kicking off now. Interesting team. Hovering in the shadows, do Arsenal come in for Pavard? Wouldn't necessarily rule that out, but yeah, Pavard's desperate to get out. He's got Inter, yeah, he's there. He wants to get out of Bayern. He's got Inter and United. He really wants to, he'd happy to go to United, he'd happy to go to Inter. He's stuck a little bit at the moment, with Bayern, but it's United. I was critical of United's window, Scott, and I thought Pavard and Amrabat, who we'll come on to, would have been really. Would have given them a real win in this window. Really would have given them the squad that real boost, a real quality boost as well. So it's a real quality coming in. And now you're stuck with some of these players. And yeah, the Maguire one, not necessarily so with Van de Beek, who we know is this deal with Sociedad has really just not kicked on. It stalled.
So what's the hold up with Van de Beek? Because we'll talk about Amrabat in a bit.
But it's over that loan and how it's going to become a permanent or a mandatory. Van der Beek is, Real Sociedad love Van der Beek. They really, really want him, but they're concerned by his injury record, Scott, which is not good, is it, since he's come? He's got a lot of problems. They do not want to pay a permanent deal for Van der Beek unless he proves his fitness. So I think United ideally, someone said, oh, after 10 games, it becomes permanent. That's no good. If he plays 30 games, then I think Sociedad would do a mandatory. It's all around the mandatory and obligations and stuff. But United is just not bending on it at the minute, and it's costing them on this one as well. So we'll see where
we're going. Are United going to hold this position right until the end? Or are they just, you know, they're going to bend at the last minute?
The player really wants to go to Sociedad. You know, Sociedad assigned Zacharyan, the brilliant young Russian who Chelsea came close to getting. That war doesn't impact on Van der Beek particularly, but Sociedad are of the opinion saying, look, we don't need Van der Beek in, but we do want him. But they're not going to overpay. And you know, that deal is there. United gambling, does someone from Turkey come in again from Van der Beek? The Saudi, do Ajax come in? Now they're going to get the kudos money in Alvarez. I think Ajax do like him a lot, and that is an option. But it's a big gamble to take from United's part.
So let's, again, this is United's business at the moment is conditional on getting players out. I think we wrote a piece this week, Graham. United are ticking off.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sofyan Amrabat a little bit by making him wait. Is that the case? I mean, but United were, they sold Fred this month, but the clear indication was we need to get rid of either Scott McTominay or Donny van de Beek as well. And the holdup on van de Beek means that they can't trigger Amrabat yet.
Yeah, exactly. And as we reported, it's basically done with Amrabat. Everything's agreed in principle, terms between clubs, etc. Everyone knows once van de Beek done, this could be done very quickly. It's and the player, as we, I think the player's got a very similar attitude to a lot of United fans. He's getting very frustrated at this. The United fans really want Amrabat, don't they? You can tell better than me. Mm-hmm. They really want Amrabat, and I think he fills a real need in that squad, as we saw on Monday. I think he really does something. He does a job that Fernandez, Eriksen, and Mount can't do, but all three will probably be asked to do at some point if they don't get Amrabat. And he's there to be had, you know, and they're in Liverpool. I think they're quite fortunate. Liverpool haven't really stepped up. But Liverpool have been kept informed. Juventus have been kept informed. The player, essentially, is committed to United. And, yeah, he will be really, really angry if this doesn't come off. Still 2 weeks ago. Still really a lot of hope there. But, yeah, there's no more desperate to get this done than Amrabat and a lot of United fans. But, yeah, it's exactly. Until... I think United is fearful of FFP. They really are. And they just need Van der Beek out to get that one done. And I think Amrabat does get done, Scott, but you know, this was such a strange window.
So, yeah, that's Eric Bailly is also still there as well. I mean, like, you know, they told him he can go months ago.
Yeah, he wasn't reliant on it. I don't think you're relying on him for anything because you're letting him go at a bargain fee, I think. So he'll be okay. But he'll be out of United by the time. I think by the time the Saudi window shuts in 2 weeks into September, Bailly will be gone.
Yes. And also the big thing that's surrounding United this week is they made a communication on Mason Greenwood, made a statement on Mason Greenwood. Where, as far as we understand it, Graham, that is there an indication that they want to bring him back? I mean, everything, it's a very controversial decision, obviously. Where do United stand on this? Why are they playing it this way? I guess
it's interesting. Obviously, the main thing is they are petrified of the reaction coming down from the press and the media. Our understanding, Scott, is that the Glazers have passed it down to Richard Arnold, down to a football level from a real top hierarchy. They've passed it down now, and they are saying they don't have any issues with Greenwood coming back. There's no legal issues there now. He hasn't been charged. He hasn't served any time in prison. So from their point of view, there's no issues there. They passed it down to Richard Arnold. And I believe Richard Arnold has informed senior members of the footballing team that they're planning on bringing him back. And I believe that broadly is the plan. I just don't think they've pulled the trigger on it yet. And it hasn't been 100% green-lighted. I think their plan is to bring him back. When that does happen, I think
is
it
that,
will.
Is that dependent? Like the reaction has been,
you know
as you'd expect.
I think Arnold and Ten Hag have talked it over. It's my understanding from a footballing point of view, the footballing staff would like him back. I think they'd like him to be in training as we speak. I think Richard Arnold is erring towards bringing him back in. That's what we understand. He's told people that he is coming back in. He just hasn't quite pushed that final green for go yet. And that's what the club are waiting on. They're waiting on someone to make that decision, and they haven't waited on Richard Arnold to make that decision. I believe he will, though. I think, you know, at the end of the day, we're here to talk about football. We're talking about one of the best young forwards in world football, Scott. And bringing a good Mason Greenwood back in, it's quite a lot of hurdles for United, you know. As I said, I've been critical of the Højlund sign in terms of the fee, but it'd be great for Højlund because the pressure's off him a little bit then, you know. I think it works in so many ways. Yeah, you know, we're not... There's so many Premier League players who, given their off-field conduct, we're not fans of, Scott, but we're here to talk about football, but transfers in terms of football, I think United bring him back. I do.
That's the way it looks at the moment. No official decision from Man United as it stands. But it does seem and I think that's the decision they are taking.
Yeah, it's a reason we'll come on to him in a minute. The reason why United haven't pushed further for Kudos. I think Mason Greenwood's going to fill that role in the squad.
Let's move across Manchester. It's been suggested that the official decision could come as early as next week. I mean, we wait and see.
We haven't talked about the takeover, Scott, in recent weeks, have we? We've almost forgotten about that. I think we'll find out about Greenwood before we find out about the takeover.
No surprises there. Anyway, let's move across Manchester because we have, as far as we understood it, Lucas Paqueta to Man City was on. In doubt at this point, Graham. What's happening?
Yeah, we're getting word from the Paqueta camp this morning. I'm told that both clubs haven't pulled out completely yet, but it's in major doubt as we stand. There is two weeks to go the window. So if I was a West Ham fan, I wouldn't be throwing my Paqueta party just yet, knowing that there's 2 weeks of this window left, Scott. You know, we're not talking, if we're saying the same thing when we do that pod on September 1st, if we're saying the deal's still in doubt, then yeah, get your balloons out, West Ham fans, and have your Paqueta party. We've got still 2 weeks of this window left, Scott. We've got 2 weeks of Pep Guardiola watching how his team cope without Kevin De Bruyne. And I think that's the real danger here with West Ham. Yeah, it is in doubt now. As we stand, it's not going ahead. But they've got the money, West. They've got Man City have got the money and they are waiting on this. It's fascinating. But yeah, as we stand now, it's a major doubt. It's 80%, 90% with what we're being told from West Ham not happening. But
transfer window is mad, so you know.
Yeah. So I'd be happier if I was a West Ham fan wanting to keep Paqueta this morning. I'd be happier, but I wouldn't be. Having that party just yet.
Man City. It does seem as though they are keeping hold of Bernardo Silva, who has been wanting, like I've said this on previous shows, he seems like he's wanted to leave for every summer for the last 2-3 years. Is it just the case here, Graham, that Barcelona are so hamstrung by the way that they've managed their club over the past 5 years or so that they just can't get Bernardo Silva out of City, and as a result Bernardo is gonna extend his deal?
Yeah, intrinsically, yeah. That, broadly speaking, that is the point, Scott, where I think they could have done some sort of deal here. If City were willing sellers, they could have facilitated some sort of loan. You know, Barcelona could have come up with some wonderful deal to loan him and pay it off in 100 years' time or something. Whatever it may be, Laporte comes up with. But City are not willing sellers, and they made it clear to Silva throughout. And the major point in this now is the domino what's fallen is that Barcelona have opened talks to Atletico to finally get João Félix. Now, you know, João Félix, who's been wanting this move all summer, he's
wanted this for his entire career, really.
Yeah, he's turned down PSG. You know, it's been out of Silva as well. PSG moved on to other things now, and it looks like it's going to be a very similar deal from what I'm being told to what Chelsea did, but with an option. So, but about 10 million euros loan fee, and then coming in, And because they've moved on to João Félix, that's just a real signal to us that Silva isn't going there. Although from the City end, we're told that they're very confident that a new deal is signed by the end of the month, Scott. A new deal which will make Bernardo Silva one of the highest paid players in the Premier League. One of the highest paid players at City, along with Haaland and De Bruyne. And Silva, yeah, thoroughly deserving of that contract. That contract he's getting at City is bigger than the one he was going to get at Barcelona, by the way. So yeah, I think
a long-term deal, or is this just a tie-over?
Is it 2025 he's got already, isn't it, Scott? So I think we'll see it to 2027, 28, I'm told. That's sort of an area. I don't think there'll be a release clause in there from what we're being told. But that's and to tie that Barcelona-Man City ribbon, Scott, talks are ongoing with João Cancelo. Barcelona still hope to. City are asking for a lot of money. City want to do a loan, but with a mandatory of close to £60 million, which is pushing
easy
a bit.
Barca.
yeah. So Barcelona are willing to do a big option, but not a mandatory. But one interesting line on Cancelo that we did bring the news this a few months ago, that Arsenal were interested in Cancelo. obviously that and that didn't really go away. They signed Timber, etc. in the summer. It didn't really go away. I think he was always on Arteta's radar, the player who could fit into a system wonderfully. I think he probably could. Now Timber's been injured. I'm told there, again, has been contact in the background between intermediaries, Arsenal, Cancelo. I'd say he's still likely for Barcelona, but I'm told it's giving Barcelona something to think about here and Cancelo something to think about. There's a possibility of Arsenal back on the radar here. City aren't really bothered where he goes. We know they've done plenty of business with Arteta. I don't know about you, Scott. I could see Cancelo at Arsenal. The fact that Barcelona haven't got this done yet, they could be made to pay.
It's that type of player that Arsenal have been favouring, can play in a variety of positions, proven Premier League performer, former Man City player. They like those, obviously.
Loan deal, likely to be a loan as well, have to pay his way. Yeah, I wouldn't rule this out. So, you'll be able to read that on site as we're speaking, or very soon anyway. It's a fascinating situation there. Keep an eye on Cancelo and Arsenal.
Obviously, Bernardo Silva, if they are to keep him. Cole Palmer's emerged as well over the past few weeks, and Pep has gone on record of saying this week he'll either stay or he'll be sold, not loaned.
James McAtee's in that situation as well, Scott. But Cole Palmer looks to have been, he's ahead of him firmly in the pecking order now. They were looking, as we reported, Elise was one they were looking at, Bradley Barcola. Looks like Leon might keep him now, but we've had it confirmed at PSG. See both interesting options for him. But Cole Palmer's really stepped up, hasn't he? He's played a part. He's played a big part in the Community Shield and the Super Cup. So, the team who really were interested in Cole Palmer, no surprise, were Brighton. They really liked him. They were willing to do a permanent deal. But, yeah, I think Palmer, whilst he thinks there's a chance there, I think he's got a chance. And Palmer, even playing this bit role at City, does he become an England player? Scott, that's an interesting thing. I think there's every chance.
Hmm. For sure.
You know, if he plays a dozen Premier League games for Manchester City, he's certainly got a chance of being that playing for Germany.
Yes, indeed. Quick nod to the Premier League action this weekend. Man City, Newcastle. How do you see that one going?
Interesting. I thought, as you know, I'm one of the few people who did. I believe Tonali would fit in perfectly next to Bruno. I was obviously proved right on the opening weekend.
One game.
I know. I still think Newcastle are missing that. You know, Joelinton is a hard worker, but I think if you put what I love about Tonali and Bruno, Scott, is I think they remind me of Keenan's goals. That two centre midfielders who can box to box, both of them. They can both do everything. It's like an old-fashioned almost 4-4-2. Joe Linton's in there as well, but I think you could afford to take Joe Linton out and maybe put a Paqueta-type player in there. And I think that'd take Newcastle up to the next level, personally. But I think Bruno and Tonali do it at both ends. I think it's so refreshing. You can see them playing together. I think it's a wonderful combination there. But going this weekend, I think it'd be interesting to see if Almiron plays again. I think Newcastle would be loyal to some of their old soldiers, see if Harvey Barnes starts the weekend. But back to your point, though, Man City the better team and they'll beat Newcastle 3-1.
Just a nod to your Bruno Tonali midfield axis. That is a midfield that I've formed on Football Manager in previous. Yeah, that's the dream. It has been the dream on
I think it reminds me of that old that Keenan scores where they're both box to box. They could one of them sits, one goes, etc. Yeah, and take it in turns, but one of them could be making that. Either of them could make that squash buckling tackle in the box whilst the other could be poking in the 6-yard box. They're both capable of doing that. It's an old-fashioned thing. Maybe not a 6 or 8, but just centre midfielders. Like a Paul Inter, Roy Keane type player.
Let's move on. We've talked about West Ham and Mohamed Kudus several times, actually, throughout this podcast so far, and he is on the agenda. What's West Ham's plan for him, Graham? Because obviously Brighton have made their play. That's not come off. Why West Ham not Brighton? What's the plan and what's West Ham's plan here?
Why West Ham not Brighton? I think only the player could tell us that, Scott. I think looking from the outside, I'm not sure many of us could. Although, actually, one explanation was offered to me this morning. A very good source told me this morning, Scott, and it's our understanding that he might be used as a centre-forward at West Ham, which might explain why West Ham not Brighton. would he play as a centre forward at Brighton? Probably not. He'd probably play out wide, or because Evan Ferguson is going to, by the end of the season, Evan Ferguson will be Brighton's number nine. I think we have little doubt about that.
And he'll be worth 200 million quid.
Is that path? If he wants to play as a striker, is that path at Brighton? Probably not. At West Ham, there's a clear path to playing that role there, Scott. Scamacca's gone. Antonio desperate to go. We know that. So who's that? I think Kudos. And when they were linked first, they linked after Kudos. I did question it for West Ham, thinking you've got Bowen out wide. Can he play on the left? Probably not. Can he play as a midfield in the Premier League? Certainly not in the Paquetá's day. Certainly not. But I think there is that role for him to play as Antonio replacement up there. We know that Erik ten Hag always thought he was a potential striker, Scott, but hence their interest. I still think he'd be a lovely fit at Arsenal as well. I really do. But interesting. Yeah, our understanding it, West Ham might use him as a striker, and that fits me. I think that's a great pickup. And it shows Tim, they're using Tim Snyder now, his contacts abroad in Holland, in Western Europe, to get these deals done. He's obviously in for the Mavropanos deal at Stuttgart, using his contacts there, and he's really pushing for this Kudos deal. This will be the first real Tim Steeden deal we see at West Ham after Alvarez. And yeah, fascinating stuff. I think Kudos, I'd love to see him as a centre-forward. I think it works. You know, I think once we knew that Erik ten Hag fancied him there, Scott, that probably won me over a lot. I think it's a really fascinating situation for West Ham. I think if they bring him in, yeah, get him in your fantasy teams. I think he's going to play a lot more centrally, a lot more as a striker than we first thought.
I've mentioned it several times on this podcast, but he did play for Ajax at Anfield and scored an absolute worldie of a goal.
He finished most like last 6 months of the season, he played as centre forward for Ajax, which a lot of people don't realise, do they?
Yeah. So, Graham, West Ham progressing on this, is it in danger at all of anyone hijacking? Because hijacking is the thing to do. Chelsea hijack everything. You know,
I do, Scott. I think I think you could really sell it to me if United came in for him. Wouldn't surprise me. If Arsenal came in, as I said, wouldn't surprise me. Chelsea came in, would not surprise me. We know they're all interested, Scott, but are they interested enough to really push this through? That's why Tim Steeden, as we speak, Scott, is in Amsterdam. He's aware of these other teams. And so is Kudos' people. That's why they kept Brighton at arm's length. They didn't really reject it, but Brighton said, no, we've had enough of waiting for you. We're not going to wait. Kudos knows that these teams have an interest, but do they have an interest to really pull the trigger? That's what West Ham are doing, and they've been doing the clever thing. They're saying, look, this deal is on the table. They've agreed personal terms. Let's get it done. West Ham are pushing it now because they know there are other teams hovering.
We'll see if West Ham get that deal over the line. One deal that is going to go over the line, by the looks, is Tyler Adams, who's doing a medical at Bournemouth.
Yeah, really good pickup for Bournemouth. It's got, you know, what, just over 20 million release clause. I still think he would have done a great job at Liverpool as well. I'm surprised they didn't push that. Chelsea agreed terms. That's not fair. Chelsea agreed terms. Tyler Adams couldn't get it over the line with him personally, but they agreed to the release clause. But excellent pickup, I think, for Bournemouth. More clever business by them.
Yes, indeed. That one should be over the line soon. That's it, actually. We've come to the end of running order. There's going to be loads of...
I mentioned, Scott, the only team I forgot to put on the rundown for you as well was Aston Villa. They should be announcing the double capture. We talk about Zaniolo on the other show. We didn't speak about they are bringing... I did mention on that show that I thought they might bring a left-back in to replace Tyrone Mings, and it turns out they are. Marcus Acuna, Argentina's World Cup winning left back, is coming on. Monchi, the head of president of football operations, I think, is that right? He's used his pulling power at Seville to get that done. My word, what a good signing this will be, Scott. This is a terrific pickup. I know he's got 30, Acuna, but wow, that's another upgrade on what they've got. Marcus Acuna with Martinez. Tyrone's the big blow, because I thought Mings would actually operate a left back quite a bit. We've seen what Emery's done with Juan Foyt at Villarreal. He likes his big fullbacks, doesn't he? So I thought Mings would end up there. But I think Acuna's a wonderful pickup. But it shows what this Aston Villa deals do, Scott. It highlights what a well run club they are now. You know, if you lose Buendia, you lose Mings. You're not sat there speculating for 2 weeks. It's next man up, isn't it? They've got the list of who's next on. You can see them on. They've got their big board, as the NFL teams have. Who's next up? Zaniolo and Acuna. And you go and get it done. That's what well-run clubs do.
I will add one other thing to the order. Everton in talks with Southampton over a deal for Shea Adams. Now, does this strike you as the 20-goal-a-season striker that Everton really require?
It's no offence to Shea Adams, Scott, whatsoever. He's a decent player. But I think I saw his record. Was he a one in four man, really? This bolsters my opinion that Everton are getting relegated. Is Shea Adams an improvement on Neil Maupay? No, he's not. What are you doing, Everton?
You're buying a striker really that doesn't have a proven goal scoring record of.
And you've already got one. You get it is. I just don't get it, Scott. I really don't. I think Everton are, you know, if it wasn't for Jordan Pickford, you know, they'd be down by Christmas along with Luton and Sheffield United. Jordan Pickford will keep it respectable for his team. Jordan Pickford and his stock is going down because of Everton. I still think Jordan Pickford's as good as anything in the Premier League, Scott, but being in that Everton team is just sucking the life out of him, I think. But he stayed loyal to them. But it's Everton, no, they're doomed. They lost to Fulham last week. You know, I'm not wise in hindsight. Look back to the picks, I had to put Everton bottom three. I feel sorry for the fans. I feel sorry for the Everton fans. It just sums up Everton's situation, and it sums up a team who were getting relegated. Signing Shea Adams just sums up a team who was getting relegated. Did they really? My point is, Scott, what is the point? If you think you're going to get what you're signing to, what's the point? You may as well have kept Ellis Sims if you sold to Coventry. What is a homegrown player? Or Nathan Broadhead, where he's gone now. But you may give these youngsters a chance. It beggars belief for me. I really don't. I don't get it.
I think I was the one that saw a few years ago when he was announced at Southampton. He did some interviews with club media and said, of course, we want to win the league at Southampton. And they've just been relegated. I look forward to...
He was talking about the championships, Scott, wasn't he?
I'm sorry, Shea Adams. Anyway, that is the end of the show. We just had two things to tack on towards the end of the running order, but that's it from Graham and myself. Please subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and follow us on the socials at @ Scott Saunders, at Graham Bailey as well. Nightymin.com for all the latest news, reports, and everything else that's going on in football. Nightymin.com/talkingtransfers for all the latest transfer news, and we'll be back probably early next week, Tuesday-ish, to round up what's going on, the latest developments on everything we've discussed today, plus anything new. We are entering, this has been a mad transfer window, we are entering the mad part of the transfer window generally, because the last 2 weeks, you know. Historically, transfer deadline day, as we etch closer to it, always gets a little bit madder. Anyway, thank you, Graham. Any final thoughts, or shall I wrap it?
Obviously, nice. Well, to touch on Middlesbrough, nice to see Middlesbrough spending some of the Chewbacca money. Emmanuel Latila coming in from Atalanta, so all our hopes are pressed on him. But talking of poor recruitment, Middlesbrough are highlighting poor recruitment so far this summer. I think they've had an awful window. So I'm not slagging Manchester United off, Scott. I'm slagging my own Middlesbrough as well. Both had Manchester have a good window. Middlesbrough have had an awful one so far. So we're not backing Michael Carrick, unfortunately. We're not backing him well enough.
Not well enough. Common theme around a number of clubs. Anyway, that is it from us from Talking Transfers. As I say, nightymin.com/talkingtransfers for all the latest. And hopefully we'll be back to a full complement of people with Toby and Sean back with myself and Graham next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you soon. Have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the football and talk to you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.